Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The best things happen after dark. Nightclubs are the ultimate space for self-expression, escape, music, socializing, and forgetting for a moment the outside world. They're a place to discover ourselves, find new friends, and fall in love. As humans, we like to dance to a beat, and there's nothing like a good night out. I'm Jody Harsh. I'm a DJ, producer, and occasional club promoter. I know how to tear up a dance floor, and for this podcast, I want to explore with my guests how club culture and going out has shaped their identities and informed their work. I've got us the guest list and cue jump sorted, so we'll delve right into the hazy memory banks and hit the floor. This is Life of the Party. My guest this week is a pioneer. He's from the first generation of superstar DJs. He's been the go-to guy for floor-filling tunes for decades, a key player in Britain's tapestry of club culture, and he's royalty within Cool Britannia. He's a true scientist when it comes to music production and an encyclopedia of musical knowledge. He's played music to people everywhere, and I really mean everywhere. Norman Cook, aka Fatboy Slim, this is your Life of the Party.
Well, with an introduction like that, I can only disappoint, really.
Oh, no, I pride myself on my introductions. How's it going? You okay?
Yeah, good, good.
What should I call you? Should I call you Norman?
My friends call me Norman, yeah.
Do you think it's important to have a stage name and a persona for you? Does it sort of help you perform, almost like armour or something?
Yeah, it's not so much armour. It's more just having a demarcation of what is real and what is fantasy. Because obviously DJing, I try and take people into the fantasy world. So I kind of go into that world myself, which over the years is involved kind of stimulants and there's kind of things that you don't really want as baggage in your normal life. And early in my career, it was kind of, I didn't quite know sometimes where Fatboy Slim ended and Norman began. But as Norman became a father and a husband and things like that, it's kind of like for self-preservation, it was good to have a demarcation between where when I was Norman, I acted like a responsible member of society, and when I was Fatboy, I had carte blanche to do whatever I wanted.
Totally. I can totally relate. So the difference between Fatboy Slim and Norman is like vast these days.
Yeah. And ever wider as my life goes on.
Yeah, interesting. Now, is it true? I'm just going to throw a fact at you. Is it true that you have the Guinness Book of Records title of the most aliases? Leading on from that theme of like the difference between Norman and Fatboy Slim.
Yeah, I mean, different reasons. But last time I checked, I had the most top 40 hits under different names, which I think is a sort of celebration of some kind of schizophrenia.
Yeah. What was that cartoon years ago where the guy goes in the phone box and comes out as a different character, a different look? Do you remember that?
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, but through most of my career, though, they weren't as marked as me putting on my going to work clothes. It just meant I could do different kinds of music. I could, I kind of had so much going on in my head. It was like one act wasn't enough to kind of satisfy all my sort of urges. So I kind of had like a house guys and a pop guys, and in the old days before internet, you could get away with having aliases and no one actually really knew it was you.
Totally. Sell tickets in the same venue and the same weekend. Yeah.
Well, I've been booked on the same bill as myself.
Have you really?
Yeah.
That's genius.
But and also, don't forget my career has been 73 years now. So obviously over the years, I've got through a few different personas.
Yeah. I want to take you back to the very, very beginning. So your first ever parties as a child. Do you remember like a birthday party growing up? Like, were you bitten by a party bug really young?
Not really, no. I was bitten by the music bug really young. I can remember a moment when I was about, I actually worked it out from the years. I was been 8 years old and the Osmonds came to town and they were like on the news and everything. It was right at the height of Osmond mania, which you probably too young to to fathom.
I'm 21.
Yeah, exactly. So imagine, you know, the latest boy band arrives in town and they're playing at Wembley and whatever. And I saw Donny Osmond. He had a leather jacket with his name written in studs on the back. And he had a piano with light bulbs all over it that lit up when he played. And my 8-year-old self just went, that's what I want. I want a piece of that.
Right.
And so it was more about wanting to be a musician and wanting to be in the, you know, a pop star, I suppose, for want of a better word. It was more about that than the partying.
Yeah.
In those days. That came first.
We always sort of in control of the car radio and stuff. Like, where did DJ coming into this?
The DJing bit came from the fact that, again, before your time, before the internet, in order to hear records at a party, someone had to physically bring the records along. And I was, because of my love of music, I was the only one who had all the records. Mm. So if you wanted to hear all of them, you had to invite me to the party and I'd bring my little box of records. But it being teenage parties, the records would invariably end up covered in vomit and cigarette butts.
Yeah.
And left all over the floor. So one girl invited me to a party and said, and I said, do you want me or just my records? And she went, well, kind of the records. And
yeah.
I went, you know what? I don't want to bring the records. And explain why. And she said, her parents had a bit of money. She said, what if my dad hires these like double decks and kind of you're in charge of the records and you DJ?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'll try it out. And something very, very, very big happened that night.
Yeah.
I discovered that I get a real kick from actually playing my favourite records to other people.
So was that your first time on a set of Technics?
Oh, Chris, this is way before Technics. Oh. This would be... Hold on.
Was this on the gramophone you were talking about?
This would have been on a wind-up gramophone.
Yeah.
No, it was... They were like Garrard belt drive things. They used to have these consoles called Citronic Thames 2, which is just basically, it's a big lump of wood.
Right.
With two old belt-driven record players and a little mixer in the middle. So everyone just used to hire that out and then hire me to be the DJ.
Right.
And I just, that was when the kind of the party lust wanting to be the DJ bit of it kicked in.
Got it.
That must have been when I was about 15.
Okay. And then do you remember walking onto a dance floor for the first time and how that felt? Like, what was the first club you ever walked into?
The first club I ever walked into was a club in Brighton called Sherry's.
Right.
Which was kind of a Wednesday night at Sherry's was like the huge new romantic event on the South Coast. And I was living in Red Hill at the time. And so we would drive all the way down to Brighton for it. And that's the reason I ended up in Brighton, basically, was that, those Wednesday nights. But I remember the first time I got in and walked across the dance floor. It's the club that was in Quadrophenia.
Okay.
Where the guy jumps off the balcony. Really big club, but
yeah,
they gave it up to the New Romantics on Wednesday nights.
Right.
And they would play like sort of New Romantic music and David Bowie and really early electro. And,
would any of the London lot come
funk
down? Like any of the New
Romantics? Yeah. All kind of Steve Strange and Boy George. It was kind of like their sort of the Wednesday night thing was hopped down to Brighton.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I still remember to this day just walking across the dance floor and just feeling the music.
Yeah.
Hearing crazy music I'd never heard before.
Yeah.
Because again, pre-internet, club music, you only ever heard it if you went to clubs.
Yeah. So would you follow DJs around to hear new music then? Were there specific DJs?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really took it to a next level for me. Before, it was kind of just me playing my favourite records to mates. Well, I used to do weddings and when I was at sixth form college, do weddings and like, you know, cricket club discos and stuff like that. But when I heard a DJ actually mixing, like properly, like beat matching, it took it into a whole new, again, that kicked it into the next phase of, you know, club DJing and getting into the sort of creative side of DJing rather than just the pure enjoyment of playing records to people, the art of mixing.
So you were 15 at this point?
Well, by now I'm 18.
Right. You know, isn't your daughter the new superstar DJ? She's the next gen.
Yeah, we did a little stream together, or maybe, well, she did a stream, and it got like 8 million views. Freaked me out because I'd thought in my 37-year career, I've travelled all around the world. I've never played to that many people in my whole career. If you put every gig I've done back to back, that would be nowhere near that. I think about all the times I wasted in hotel rooms and airports and wherever. I should have just stayed at home with my daughter and done it.
And should let her do it. How does that make you feel, Norman?
on one half, very proud, and the other, no. It was one of those things that could have only happened during lockdown. It was just a moment, and she's been watching me DJ all my life, and she just started learning, and I was just, they asked me to do a podcast for a stream for Camp Bestival, and it was going to be my daughter's first festival, and she, to get over the disappointment of her not going to her first festival this year, I just thought, oh, well, we'll have a bit of fun with her DJing.
Yeah. How old is she?
10.
Nice. Not club age yet. You can't start sending her out after lockdown just yet.
Well, obviously, with me as a dad, she's had experience of nightlife. We've just come back from Ibiza, and she loves going to Mambo. She comes into the DJ. She actually played a few tunes with me in Mambo this summer.
Amazing.
And she got to go to Ibiza Rocks this year as well, special dispensation.
That's amazing.
So, she's probably more clued up about clubbing than most of your average 10-year-old.
Yeah. Can you be my dad? Oh, my God. You've had, a colourful career. What DJ sets have really stood out as being like the most memorable?
I don't know, just weird, random ones. It seems like the longer I play to a smaller audience, the more memorable it is for me. Which is, it's a bit perverted because most people could think, oh, you know, like Brighton Beach or Glastonbury or something like that. But those big gigs for me, they're more like work and you know what it's like. You don't take risks. When you've got a really big crowd, you only play the favourites.
Totally.
So the bigger the crowd, the less you're really having fun and thinking about what you're doing. And you're just concentrating on not cocking it up.
Yeah.
And so my most memorable, I don't know, playing for 4 hours at Pike's.
Right.
To like 300 people, you know, and that's really where I go on a journey totally with them, and I don't feel like it's just me standing there showing off. It becomes a journey that we go on together.
That sort of intimate venue is still important for you to be a part of.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, that's when I have my fun. The other bit I just do to pay the rent.
Yeah. Got it. But you played like the. Have you played the Great Wall of China or something ridiculous like that?
Yeah.
What is left to tick off? Is there anywhere that you really, really want to play that hasn't happened just yet?
The only one really on my bucket list, someone pointed out the other day that for someone who wears so many Hawaiian shirts as I do, I've never played in Hawaii.
Oh, no.
But I think that's the only one. But the thing is, with most of there are things on my bucket list nowadays I didn't realise were on the bucket list until someone points it out. Mm. Till someone says, oh, do you want to play an Olympic closing ceremony or, a toilet here, you know. So I haven't got a list as such, but when things crop up that I've never done it before, for me, that's reason enough to do it.
The show that you did that I really wanted to, really wish I could have been at, which I think was quite a long time ago, was you and Arban Van Helden, the boxing ring.
Yeah.
That is the stuff of legend.
Yeah, to this day I'm quite proud of that because in terms of
Brixton Academy,
we did two nights at Brixton and one in somewhere in Stoke-on-Trent,
right?
But that was born out of wanting to do the boutique, the Big Beat Boutique, which is my kind of home club, wanting to do our sort of third birthday party, and we had Armand booked to play, and he'd just gone to number one that week, and I just had my first number one or something, and it's like we can't put us two on in a 300 venue in Brighton.
Yeah,
we've got to think a bit bigger.
Yeah,
so then we ended up at the Brixton Academy. Then it's like, well, how do we make it a show? Because DJs didn't play venues like that in those days. And I'm like, I've got to make it more of a show. And to this day, I do think it's one of the best shows we've ever put on.
Because you had an actual boxing ring, right?
We had an actual boxing ring that revolved. We hired the guy who does it on the telly, like. Get ready to rumble. Yeah. We had him with a microphone that came down from the ceiling. We had me and Armand actually wearing, having our own like robes, and we came on from opposite corners to our own theme tune, and we did the whole squaring off thing and the tossing of the coin. I mean, it was kind of sort of theatre,
yeah,
verging on pantomime.
It's really campy, quite camp. And yeah, totally. And didn't the artwork look like that, the Warhol Basquiat artwork? Was that the reference, like the sort of the?
No, the reference was just a boxing poster.
Right, right.
And we actually did the press conference in a boxing gym in Brixton, and we did the whole sort of squaring off. We really tried not to doing that like face to face thing, trying not to make each other laugh.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, I'm still quite proud of that, because I don't think, you know, the sort of production values in terms of bigger stages and things like Elro and that have got sort of bigger and bigger. But in terms of a really stupid camp idea of how to have two DJs having going back to back,
yeah,
I don't think that's ever been bettered.
That's amazing. What do you have, sort of a favourite venue to play anywhere in the world? A club venue, like an old school night.
Yeah, club. I love the old Zap in Brighton.
Okay.
Just because I've been playing it for 35 years.
Do you still do that now? And
I still do, yeah. I do at least once a year. We do a charity night there, normally the week before Christmas. And there's a magic in that room. I suppose it's because it's got all the memories of before, the memories of me partying in there as well as playing there. Mm. There's other clubs that I've gone and played, but I've only ever played there. I've never, like, partied there, but the Zap's kind of part of my bones, because I've seen so many other DJs in there, and until they refurbed it, I knew every inch and every corner and what goes on. And you know,
don't you hate it when they refurbish a club and it like completely changes inside and it just feels too new?
I don't know, sometimes change is good.
Yeah.
And most, to be honest, most DJ booths, if you see them with the lights on, they could do with a bit of tidying up.
Oh, disgusting. Yeah, like actual, yeah,
they're
like
pretty scuzzy,
mold,
aren't they?
Yeah, it's like mold everywhere. So let's talk about these 5Fs. So yes, I've read somewhere that for a DJ gig to get over the line with your management, it has to fulfil one of 5 Fs. So take us through.
No, it has to get 3 out of 5.
Okay. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I mean,
okay.
I'll lower it to a 1 or 2 if they're big fat Fs.
But okay, let's go through them then. So,
okay, so it has to fulfill either it's a first, something I've never done before.
Yeah.
It's a favour for a friend.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Finance, obviously, if it's a big payer.
Rent. Yeah.
Yeah. We are all prostitutes and everyone has a price.
100%. Yeah.
And fifth is food. If there's a restaurant that I really like my food, and if there's a restaurant in a city that I've heard of, I will often get myself a gig in that city, so as an excuse to go to that restaurant.
Has anyone ever fulfilled all 5?
I've actually got 6 out of 5.
No
once.
Way! So is that's a mate with a restaurant?
It was
in the back.
It
of
was.
The
it was. It was Alex James and Jamie Oliver's foodie festival in wherever it was. I'd never played a food festival before. It was a favour for Alex and for James, because I know them both.
Yeah.
The money was good, the food was good, and I knew it'd be fun because it was like a kind of family festival.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre because that was the one that my management really didn't want me to do. And so I had to pull the 6 Fs on them. I'm like, look, it got 6 out of 5.
What's the 6 F?
No, there are only 5, but obviously there was 2 favours for friends.
Right.
It got 6 out of 5. That's the only way they let me do it.
Got it. So lockdown has just happened. What are your thoughts on streaming clubs and DJ shows online in lockdown? I saw your show with Idris Elba, which was great. How'd you find it?
For me, that was the first one that worked. I mean, obviously doing it with my daughter was fun. And then I did one against a blue screen for that Shangri-La Glastonbury VR experience. And they were kind of all right. But the one with Idris, it just raised the bar because of the Zoom, because I could actually see the people in their living room. And I think Pasha had been doing it. I saw Scream and Pete Tong do one. And it's like that bit on Saturday Night TV where they go, and cut into your living room now.
Yeah, yeah.
And people's faces go, oh my God, oh my God.
Yes,
oh,
yes.
Best have fun. And that is the kind of interaction that I have when I'm DJing. I always like to catch people's eye and then have a little kind of moment with them, or
totally,
actually have a visual gag with them or whatever.
Yeah.
And so We spent quite a lot of time working out how to do it and having the TV right beside us so I could actually see the people who were there, see them having a party at home, send little messages to them. They could hold up messages for me.
That's so cool.
That was the first time it felt anything like the actual DJ experience.
Yeah.
Which for me, the beauty of it is that conversation you have with the crowd.
Well, a lot, it's connection, isn't it? Yeah, through music
that
or
connection.
Through being in the same room.
Because otherwise, doing it streaming, standing there on your kitchen table playing records and trying to picture being in a club just doesn't work for me.
I lack
imagination, but it just does not.
I did
do
some
it for
on
me.
Instagram Live, and it's like, you just can't, without being able to see people there, you're like, am I doing this right? And you start to question
you
your job.
You get really self conscious and you think, you know.
Sweaty upper lip. I was like, oh my God, my face is melting. I'm like really nervous.
So I've held on to doing that. But I think the Zoom thing is the way forward because that makes people dress up and they actually can invite like 8 people round to their place and have a load of mini parties.
Yeah.
And you feel like there's some kind of interaction. Oh, that or I just managed to play 4 times in Ibiza. I was there on family holiday and I managed to play twice at Ibiza Rocks doing socially distanced pool parties.
Yeah,
how and was then that? twice at Mamba. It's interesting. They invented the tagline "Eat, sleep, stay in your seat."
Love it.
And basically, you had to stay in your seat, and you could do whatever you wanted at your own table, or in your own cabana, or on your own all the balconies of the hotel were watching you. So it was it was a series of mini parties, but obviously I had more interaction,
sure,
and that worked, but it only works in with nice weather.
Yeah How was it doing a pool party? Don't you get don't the decks get splashed? I'd worry about some.
They do if you really incite people. I mean, I again, this comes back to my style of DJing. I if I play in a pool party and I think there's a chance that they could actually fuse the decks by splashing me, I will try and encourage them to do that just to see if they can. I'll be like, come on.
Get off early. Get off work early.
Well, most places where they have pool parties, they have like a kind of perspex bit over the front.
Got it.
I did one where I did it in the round in the middle of the pool, and that was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
Bad idea.
Yeah. So what does real life club culture mean to you? I mean, for me, it's like we were just talking about that sense of togetherness and community as well, being LGBTQ person. It's that real sense of getting together and sort of that community feeling. What does it mean for you?
Exactly the same. I think the power of that shared euphoria, that community, especially, I mean, a lot of it stems historically from when we kind of, it was a weird kind of thing. It was like, those people who don't go to bed at 11 when the pub's shut, and you go and listen to that weird music in those weird places. And it really was kind of a different gang, like a different community. And when you're all put in the same room together, all of a sudden you forget the outside world and you can just be together and be you. And music is such a powerful conduit to bring everyone together. A loud throbbing music in that kind of sort of contained community, something really, really powerful and really beautiful happens.
Do you think it's less about discovering new music now? You were saying when you first started out, you were bringing new music to the
it
crowd.
Kind of is, but only because everyone's got access to it now. I mean, in those days, you know, a DJ would drop a tune, everyone would just be running up to see what it was. It's like there was no Shazam, there was no other people, you know, blogging or telling you about it. So it was more, I mean, it was more fun in those days trying to find out what those records were. And my only legitimate job in my whole career has been working in a record shop. And I would just see people coming in from a night out at night before and go, what was that tune last night? They went, and all that. That's one of the reasons my records sound like themselves. It's like there has to be a hook line that you can sing in the record shop.
Yeah, some simple thing to hum.
Obviously, you don't need that anymore with Shazam, but for all the way through, I was just thinking that bit that if you went into Rounder Records the next day and went up to me and sung it, would I be able to tell you what it was?
Got it. What's that little hook? Do you still test out music that you've just made to a dance floor? Are you self-conscious of that?
I'm actually so self-conscious these days, I do it the other way around. I will play it for ages in my DJ sets, and if someone goes, what was that tune that you went, Eat, Sleep, Rave, Repeat? I'd go, well, it's just something I've been working on. And if like enough people have gone, I think, you know, that if enough people have latched onto it or noticed it or told me it's good, then I'll release it. But I kind of do it that way around.
How long would you hold on to a record for before you release it then?
Years.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, not these days. I don't put many records out at all.
Mm.
And I kind of lost my love affair with making records.
Right.
And I've made so many over the years. Something happened. I just fell out of love with the process of making records. And also, just as you get older, you kind of lose your bottle a bit. So to put a record out, especially when you're known, if you put a record out and it tanks, it hurts these days. When I'm young and I put a record out, I didn't do well, I just thought, oh, fuck you, one day you'll get it, you know. But as I've got older and more sober, I've kind of thought, oh, actually, that really hurt. The rejection really hurt. So nowadays, I mean, I don't feel I have to put records out just for the sake of it. And so I only put one out when I really got a bee in my bonnet. And that's if I've been playing it and everybody's gone, what is that? What's that one? Yeah. Normally it's some absurd hook line, like All the Ladies in the House.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With Eats.
Yeah, yeah. That's the same thing. I've been dropping that vocal. I did a version of it about 3 years ago and I've been dropping it into my live sets. And eventually Dan was like, what is that sample you keep using? I'm like, well, it's a tune that I kind of been working on but never quite finished, and Dan beat me up into finishing it. And but yeah, no, I literally have to be dragged kicking and screaming into
to put a record
making
out.
Records these days. Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And you were quite instrumental in the Let Us Dance campaign. So I want to talk about the importance of club culture in Britain and what the dance floor really means for this country. We've spoken about like the culture and the sense of community already. What does it mean to you?
Well, there's a whole world of finance out there as well. If you want to appeal to your average Tory, you know, just tell them how much income British music generates, and whether it's DJs or live music, you know, we punch way above our weight in terms of exports and in terms of just how we're seen in the world. And that's always been part of British culture, and it's a reflection of the lovely diverse culture that we've grown up in. And it would be a real shame for that to die. They're, you know, we need the smaller venues. Well, we need all the venues. And I don't know which are going to fare worse as the longer.
I mean, there are barely any of those great small venues left as it is.
Yeah, but I mean, it's going to hit the big ones even harder because they're losing more every night, and they probably have much higher rent. So across the board, venues, you know, we don't know. I'm under no illusions that kind of what we do, especially as DJs, is we will be the last thing to be put back in place when the lockdown, because we're the antithesis of social distancing. We go out of our way to do the exact opposite, share as many bodily fluids as possible. It could be a really long time, and I think it's really important that when we do things do get back to some kind of normal, there's still the venues in business.
Yeah, but how do you see the future of the club and festival scenes post COVID looking like?
I don't know. It occurred to me the other day that if this goes on for a couple of years, there might be a generation that's kind of missed out, because you kind of had that coming of age. I mean, in these days, it's so regimentally ID'd that you have to be 18. So between 18 and 20, they are your major clubbing years. Now, if you just turned 18 and you lose those 2 years, you might sort of bypass that. Or, yeah, you know, 16-year-olds, when they come to be 18, they won't be killing to go to a club like it was. So it could really hurt it. But At the same time, I think going out late at night and getting off your face and getting laid and getting high and talking rubbish and dancing is as old as cavemen, and there will always be that primeval desire to escape.
Yeah.
And to do the things that we do in nightclubs.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's kind of a fashion that will wear off. I think some of the bigger ends of, you know, that EDM sort of culture might die off. And obviously a lot of the people involved in that were there for the money. And if they've lost their shirt on it, they may have moved on.
Yeah.
But the people who love the scene and are there for the love of it, they'll still be there. And then there'll still be another batch of 16-year-olds who want to get high and get
totally
laid.
And even with all these illegal raves that are going on around the country, well, around the world, I mean, it's not going to go away. It's not going to stop.
That's an indication. Yeah, that's an indication. It's a little worrying. I mean, maybe I'm showing my age here, but I find that a little worrying because, you know, part of me is you know, wants this to end as quick as possible, and, you know, trying to do my bit not to spread the infection. And obviously going out and raving in the middle, in the middle of nowhere, it's still fairly irresponsible. I could totally see what people's reasons for doing it, but it could, if that did start spikes, then that would just prolong the agony for the rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Can we talk a bit about sobriety?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay, you've been proudly clean and sober for a long time now. So a lot of people assume drinking and partying goes hand in hand with being a DJ. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I can totally understand that. I was one of those people for many, many years. And even when I kind of knew that I should give up, part of me was going, well, the thing is, you've got a career as a DJ. You've never done it sober. You'd probably be rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, and you owe it to yourself and to your career to carry on. And that kind of enabled me probably for an extra year or so. And then when I did get sober, I really was. It was on the understanding that this might be the end of my DJing career, or the end of my musical career, because I had always done everything instinctively as high as the audience.
Mm.
And I was, my first gig back when it's sober, I've never been so petrified in my life.
Right.
Literally, I was paralyzed with fear.
Yeah.
I felt physically sick and just thought, you know, what if I can't do, you know, what if I can't do this anymore? And I was happily surprised to find out, even though I worked out, it took me a while before I could dance again. Because I was so kind of self-conscious that the first thing that goes is your hips just lock up.
Yeah.
So I didn't dance, so I changed my DJing style.
Right.
But I worked out that people didn't seem to mind whether I was off my nut or not.
Right.
And I was the only one really who noticed.
Right.
I also found out that I kind of get off so much on watching other people having fun, I become part of it. And
the energy as well that you get from people just really going for it.
Yeah, it's quite intoxicating, the atmosphere, when you're the DJ. Sometimes when you're in the crowd and, you know, it's hard to get into it. But when it's all directed at you, you don't feel excluded.
Yeah, I guess DJs do have that reputation of being party animals, but maybe the person in control of the room and the dance floor shouldn't be the most fucked up person there.
Well, yeah, I think probably one of the two. What you shouldn't be is pussyfooting about in the middle.
Mm.
Either be the most cane person in the room leading from the front or be the sober one. I mean, I kind of, in that, you know, that tradition of like rolling drunks. I don't mean this scathingly to my audience, but having been drunk for 30 years, I know exactly what's going on in their head, and I can push these little buttons.
There you go.
And
puppeteer.
I know what happens. And it's they're quite a malleable lot.
Yeah. A master of manipulation is the DJ.
Yeah, but I don't feel it's cynical, because it's like, I only know what's going on in your head.
It's your job.
Still, yeah.
Yeah.
And I did my research thoroughly, for left no stone unturned for 30 years to know what's going on. So, I mean, part of my job is not to be in denial about what's going on in the room. It's to be shepherding it, you know, and kind of leading people in places that I kind of figure they want to go. And I've got my wits about me more that I know how to lead them there.
I like that, shepherding. That's cool. How do you stay focused and where's the stamina from? Not focused, but where's the stamina from? Like, are you like a Red Bull fiend?
I'm a, yeah, three Red Bulls before I go on.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your rider? What's your DJ rider?
My DJ rider is six Red Bulls, some,
hardcore
fizzy water, two air horns, two towels, and some upmarket nuts.
Oh, you're a cheap date.
I am, yeah. That's it, yeah.
No Nobu, nothing. Like a handful of nuts and like some can of Red Bull, and he's on.
Well, my ritual before I go on, what turns me from Norman into Fat Boy, is I take off my shoes, I put on a Hawaiian shirt, my tour manager Al slaps me really hard across both cheeks,
right,
and then I'm on.
What is that?
The slapping is just like doing a line. Three Red Bulls and two slaps around your face is pretty much like banging a line just before you go on.
Bloody hell. Wow. Is that what they taught you in rehab? A couple of slaps and a Red Bull.
They didn't teach that in rehab, but I would happily share that with share that within the fellowship.
And why the bare feet? Just for comfort.
I don't know. No, I think I dance better in bare feet.
Right.
Now, some people might take issue on that. I don't know. It just... Again, it helps me get outside myself. It helps me lose the shackles of being Norman.
Got it. Have you ever DJed in a hill, though, Norman?
In a hill?
Not like what? A hill, like a small mountain, but as in a high-heeled shoe.
And a heel. Sorry, not a hill. Have I DJed in a heel? No, I've spent time in heels, but I've never DJed,
Back in the day.
I mean, we've all dabbled.
Yeah.
I'm not very good in them. I'm kind of, I'm all right if I'm continually walking forwards, but if I try and stop, then I just carry on going forwards in some shape or form.
Right.
Which when you're behind the decks, you don't really want to be doing.
That's not ideal.
No, I definitely couldn't DJ in a heel.
Okay, right. Noted. Would you ever say you found love on the dance floor?
Ooh.
You can answer that however you interpret it.
I found a kind of love, probably not true love, but I've fallen in love with friends of mine. And again, probably certain stimulants were equally as responsible as the music was.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But I've had friends who I've just thought, I fucking love you.
Yeah.
And not in a kind of, peeled up way. But I've had evenings where I've fallen, but more with friends rather than actual kind of lovers. But having said that, I've obviously, I'm trying to think of all the loves in my life, and none of them have I pulled on the dance floor.
Right, interesting.
Or even met on a dance floor.
You're there for the music and
friends.
Yeah,
I'm probably more into the music. I'm probably a bit more interested in watching the DJ than other. Yeah.
Who are your favourite DJs? Who do you like to go out and support and see?
I love Carl Cox. I kind of based my DJing style on him and John Carter.
Yeah.
John Carter's kind of bravado and showmanship, and Carl's thing of just having more fun and just getting into it more than everyone, just leading by example. But also his communication with the crowd. He spends the whole time just picking people out in the crowd and going, how much fun is this? You know, and they go, yeah. He's like, right, that's how much fun we're having. So, he just makes me smile.
Yeah.
You know, aside, even if I wasn't listening to the music that he played, just watching him makes me smile because he just includes everybody in the party and has a continuing conversation all the way through.
I saw a video, was it his last night at Space or was it High? It maybe become High, but his last night at his Ibiza residency.
It was probably the last night at Space. Yeah.
And the tears and how emotional that was that last night. Do you get to go out much when you're not DJing? Do you?
Nah.
No.
I mean, I could. Yeah. But I don't.
I'm sure you could get guest lists.
Sure I could. But I've got two kids and I do feel a bit old if I'm in the crowd.
Yeah.
I never feel old in the DJ booth, but if I'm in the crowd, sometimes I look down and think,
I don't think there's an age limit to being a DJ either, is there?
I mean, the thing is, none of us necessarily had to be like a boy band looks in the first place.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter if we get old or fat or bald or grey, you know, because we were never supposed to be pin-ups.
Yeah.
And in terms of fitness, all you have to do is be able to stand there and wave your arms around for two, 3 hours.
Yeah.
So it's not, we don't have that shelf life that like footballers, boy bands, TV presenters, you know, because we don't have to be pleasing on the eye and we don't have to stay that fit. Yeah. So, I mean, all the only DJs I know who really, out of the really big lifer DJs, the only one I know who's retired rather than passing away was Danny Tenaglia.
Oh.
And he did it 6 months later. He's like, I can't do this.
Yeah, yeah.
he's just like, I can't, I've got to go back to it. I can't not do this.
And he's still DJing now, isn't he? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he honestly really tried to retire. But I mean, and also, those of us have been doing it for a few years. It's like, what the hell else are we going to do in our lives?
Yeah.
We're not qualified to do anything. We've got no sense of responsibility or, you know, we'd be useless at doing
anything.
Can't
get a job anyway.
Unemployable.
Rubbish basically. CV. Like, can't do anything.
Where have you been the last 37 years, Mr. Cook?
Just
hanging out in nightclubs.
Yeah. If you could visit a club from the past that's not around anymore, what would that be?
Ooh. I think I'd like to go back to Sherry's
On
a Wednesday night and just see all those people, because in those days it really was quite an epiphany. If you'd never heard a DJ mixing before, and if you'd never heard those tunes before, it was a golden time for music, because electro had just started. There was this tune called Planet Rock, which just was changing the world, and there was all these gay records by Divine,
yes,
Bobby Orlando. It was all these like weird electronic records,
yeah.
You just didn't hear them anywhere
those,
else
like,
in the world.
High energy records, yeah. Sped up disco, like
160
BPM.
But really kind of druggy electronic-y sound.
Yeah. With
and
Divine
just
like going, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, amazing.
This thing, if love is restless and I'm just not satisfied.
Oh, so
yeah,
good.
Just the excitement of all of us just hearing that kind of music for the first time. And seeing people like Divine, I saw Divine played at Sherry's on, and and it all just being a discovery. Obviously, at that age, you're always discovering sex and alcohol and drugs and all those other exciting, fun things. But hearing music that you'd never heard, that sounded like it came from outer space, but also it sounded like, oh, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. I'd like to go back and watch. Yeah, I'd stand on the balcony. I'd watch my little face, my little 18-year-old face.
Oh,
just
revisit
going,
you as a boy.
Yeah. Check out if I was as shit hot a dancer as I thought I was in those days.
Yeah, you probably had shoes on as well, didn't you, in those days?
I used to wear special, like, sort of soul boy flat, really slippy shoes so I could do spins.
Oh. Now you live in you've got a beachfront house on the coast. So do you ever have like an epic house party, or is it more like your daughter's throwing the parties now? She's 10, did you say?
She's 10, yeah. She's had a DJ at her party the last 3 years.
Yeah.
But not me. I'm
not
allowed.
Not Fat Boy Slim.
But I was allowed to DJ at my son's 18th, and that was right. that was a real big coming of age moment for me, that my son finally admitted that I might be quite cool and some of his mates might quite like me.
Got it.
Because he'd been in denial. Obviously, dads are here to be embarrassing, and I do try and do my best job.
Yeah.
But that was. But apart from that, no, I don't really party. I'm more of a eater rather than a drinker these days. And
yeah.
So.
Yeah. Have you ever been to a house party, like, totally uninvited, like gatecrash? Have you ever been a proper gatecrasher?
What, in
yeah,
over history? Yeah, fucking millions of times, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you ever been chucked out anywhere?
I've been chucked out of many a party, yeah. Back in my youth, I've done every horrible, nasty thing, thrown up in other people's houses and front gardens and nicked things and turned up with a bottle of vodka filled with water so you'd get in. Then drunk half the bottle in one to impress a girl. When I first moved down to Brighton, I came to college down here when I was 18. And I used to go out 6 nights a week, every week.
Yeah.
I think Sunday nights was the only night I didn't go out.
Yeah.
And then I started, then there was a gay club on Sunday night and I started going to that. So I was going out pretty much 7 days a week.
What was the gay club?
It was called Bolts.
Right.
Bolts. Anyone who lives in Brighton will remember Bolts on a
right.
Sunday night.
What was that like?
Really hardcore. That's where you heard the really heavy like the really heavy dubby tunes.
Yeah. Was that a bit like Trade or something?
Yeah. Yeah. Probably about on a kind of forerunner to Trade.
Yeah.
But obviously to an 18, suburban 18-year-old who's never been to a club before, it was just like, whoa.
Yeah, an eye-opener. It's an education.
A proper eye-opener. Yeah, yeah. I saw some things that, yeah, not many 18-year-olds see, not on video. Yeah, no, it's a proper hardcore gay club.
Yeah.
And but great for tunes. And, yeah, and obviously you don't go partying in Brighton without ending up lured into that web of intrigue and sin.
Totally, yeah. I'm going to fire some like quick fire questions at you that I ask everyone.
Okay.
You're throwing a party. Who's on your dream guest list? Who are you inviting? They could be living or dead. Let's say three names.
Is it a party or a dinner party?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's a party. It's a party, yeah.
Party. Oh, Christ, I don't know. Idris.
Yeah.
Elba.
Yeah.
Just because he's my sort of bromance at the moment.
Yeah.
And he likes to party. He's really funny.
Yeah.
My old mate, Jim McNulty.
Oh, yeah.
Who I used to party with for years and years and I hadn't seen for ages. And I just saw him again today. That's why he's forefront in my mind.
Right,
and
okay.
He used to make me laugh for days.
Right, okay.
And so I miss him. And, can I have some kind of sex interest?
100%, absolutely. We've got to get you laid.
Halle Berry,
there you go. Please. She'll do. Yeah, yeah. We'll arrange that. And who's the DJ and what are they playing?
Ooh.
Can't be you.
The DJ is Dan Eats Everything.
Yeah, love.
Playing whatever the hell he wants.
Perfect.
He knows what I like. He knows how to please me.
Perfect. Norman Cook, Fatboy Slim, this is your life of the party. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. That was fun.
This has been Life of the Party with me, Jody Harsh. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't subscribed just yet, please do. There's a new episode every week. Right, see you at the next party.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.